Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
When you're looking to change things or make impact with a culture that is outdated or out of style, you have to present from the organizational strategy level why the change of culture would be impactful in the most important place for the people you're speaking to, which is usually the bottom line. You have to show the return on investment, not just for the product or the services, but also for the people. Like if we change this culture, we may have less turnover. And so you have to present it in a way in the language that they understand and what they are looking at. You have to show them how making that shift or that small change, even if it's in baby steps, can affect and address that bottom line and give them more return on investment than what they're seeing right now.
Kalila Olokunola is the Chief People Officer of True Colors, a company that helps society by helping gang members brew beer. Kalila has been named one of the top 20 influencers in the people operations industry by Lattice and one of the top 22 leaders by Conscious Companies.
So Kalila, welcome to At the Edge, and thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me today. It's my pleasure and honor.
You work for a very unusual company.
True Colors is a for-profit brewery with a closely knit social mission to unite gang rivals and decrease violence in our city while uniting communities across the country. So we do that, of course, through beer.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, through beer. That would be the obvious thing to do.
True Colors started in 2015 after a 16-year-old was gunned down in Wilmington, North Carolina. And our founder and CEO at the time had a Google-type office not too far from where that shooting happened. And he had no idea that there were gangs in Wilmington. And he wanted to understand why people would shoot guns out of cars. And so he reached out to a friend of his, Ben David, who was district attorney and still district attorney right now at that time. And he asked him to connect him to somebody in gangs. And they connected him to people that they thought were sort of the top gangsters in town. And that began a conversation that sparked the conversation that shaped the idea of True Colors. You know, we ran a test where we brought in three guys that are in gangs and they were integrated into his company Untapped. And we thought there would be a huge cultural divide because Untapped is filled with white educated millennials. But after 24 hours, they were the most popular people in the building. And what that showed is that they were able to authentically adapt. They could adapt to new environments and workspaces. Something else happened that was powerful. Blanc actually still holds a record for the most demos booked. They've never worked in software. They never worked on the phones, but they were able to apply some of the skills that they learned in the streets inside of this environment. And so we thought that maybe we just got lucky, right? Let's try it again. So we hired 11 more people, which was gang leadership. And we brought them in and asked for a few things. No violence for 90 days. We want you to show up on time, do what you say you're going to do and inject positivity. And we need to also make sure that if we throw all this knowledge and information at you, that you're going to be resilient enough to handle it and that you would be able to process it and apply it to what we want you to do. And after 40 days, it happened, you know, like the True Colors existed. Those 11 guys not only showed up on time, did what they said they was going to do and inject positivity, but there were no shots fired during that time. So it showed that they had influence. And when you're hiring people from backgrounds like second chance hires, or again, you're not necessarily looking for your briefcase, which is your resume, track record. You're looking for your heart case and your head case, your cognitive ability and your motivating factors. And you take those things and you apply them and you realize that people can go from what I call the block to the boardroom. And when we realize that transition was possible from all perspectives, a founder's perspective, a president perspective, and for me as an HR person perspective, that that we could actually build this business. And by providing education and opportunity, we can become peacekeepers and reduce violence in our city.
So I imagine working as the head of HR for this kind of an organization is a very different job than most HR professionals.
It is very different. There are some traditional components to it, you know, standard payroll, compliance, you know, time and attendance. But there are also some things that we've had to invent or re-engineer for the team that we currently serve. An example is our onboarding. Most companies do a one-day onboarding or one-week onboarding. Our onboarding is 8 weeks. And that's how it starts. It ends after an additional 8 weeks. So 5 months altogether, where we're teaching you life skills, social skills, business skills, and beer. After those 8 weeks, you know, you go into a 90-day internship. But before you get to that 90-day internship, like any gang, I have an initiation. So you skydive. I take all teams that graduate from that 8-week onboarding to skydive. And most of our guys have never been in a plane. But what happens up there is that they leave everything behind. It's kind of symbolic for them of starting brand new. Once they skydive, they immediately go up to $35,000 and start their 90-day internship in the department that they express interest in. And that 90 days is filled with stretch assignments and getting over learning curves, so additional training. And they get access to, of course, medical, dental, vision, some professional development reimbursement, and they get company stock options. After that 90 days, you flow into actual career role and you become a specialist or associate and you get paid whatever that role offers based on that salary range. In most companies, you can have a recognition and reward system for things like attendance, but I use our recognition and reward system to continue to drive outcomes like unity, right? Peacekeeping and leadership. And so I have the team split up into what I call tribes for true community. And those tribes elect a head coach, which is also gang. And that head coach leads them throughout seasons. And they compete on a monthly basis based on work performance, giving back to the community because we're still trying to change perceptions, and stability. Because we also learned early on, Michael, is that we teach the team to be a professional success without addressing their personal needs, it wouldn't work. The two had to coexist together. And so it's like Maslow's theory of human needs, you know. And so if we help them with personal development, professional development becomes a little bit easier. So we offer per and pro plans for our team members also. And so a typical month in true community is our team getting a score from their supervisors. They're saying that they went and gave back to their community, whether it's at the local Boys and Girls Club or First Fruits, which is an organization that distributes food. And then we're using that system to continue to bring people together, to have conversations, to discover that you have more in common with who you labeled as rivals than what divides you. And so through true community, we've shaped brotherhoods. And so those are just two of the differences as HR in True Colors. We've had to re-engineer a lot of what traditional HR has said that we should do. We've also had to design some things from scratch.
It sounds like your job as an HR leader is actually completely different than it would be in most organizations, like completely.
I guess right now, one of the big things in HR is creating a more Jedi experience, justice, equity, diverse, and inclusive environments. And for us, inclusion is different. And so the majority of our active gang affiliates are minorities, but we have non-gang members that are also in the workspace. And so our reverse mentorship program, which I like to call an inclusorship, is where we partner gang with non-gang just to have lunch and to start a conversation, because conversations challenges what you believe. And for our guys, beliefs are foundational for skills, and skills, you know, have to lead to opportunity. And I'll kind of go through that process for you. And so we pair people together to spark conversations, because our guys are transitioning from the block to the boardroom. And a lot of the experienced hires here are already boardroom savvy, but they need to come closer to the block to understand the people that they're working with. And so we bring them together over lunch, and I measure it in its success with what I call perspective points. Did you learn something new? Would you do it again? Did you find out you had something in common? And it's powerful when you realize you have something in common with somebody that has been classified or stereotyped as an active gang member. And there's still a lot more that I believe that we can do here, especially when it comes to shaping culture, you know, because we're trying to change perspective. I have active gang on my team. One of our guys is responsible for true true community, which is our tribe system, but also pieces of culture. So every month we have a lunch and learn, and they're not learning from other people. They're learning from each other, and other people are learning from them. We invite groups in for tours of the building and to learn more about who our team is and why they are gang members. Because when you go back to the historical place of when gangs were created, they were created as gangs for good, to help shape their communities and make them a safe space to protect the women and children, and to provide for people where there was lack. And somewhere down the line, the definition was redefined by a few people who were just were rebellious, and violence began to take place and take root. And so our team here at True Colors is working to bring the perception and the definition of gang back to what it was originally created to go back to. When we think about gangs, this may make you laugh. I think about a fraternity. It's a brotherhood. It's the same way. And we are just providing the tools that they need here to be successful. And this is a model that I believe can be successful in any industry. But you can't just start something that's time specific. You have to have those enablers in place, because growth doesn't just happen in one spurt. Growth has to be continued.
How has the situation with the pandemic and hybrid work and remote work, how has that impacted True Colors?
Last year when COVID hit and shut all us down, we did go home for we went home for a couple months. I packed these large garbage bags full of supplies, like trail mix bars and sodas and drinks. But I also put in some conversation cards, some play cards, and some other tools that I knew that I would use while we were working from home. Our situation was unique. You know, last year, True Colors didn't have any beer. We weren't brewing. And because we weren't brewing, there really wasn't a lot for our team to do. We were just working the social mission. And to work the social mission, you usually have to be on the streets, right? I have to be able to hit the block. And so for me, our work from home strategy was us continuing to personally and professionally develop our team on an ongoing basis, tasking departments with ongoing responsibility to learn how to present to the team. And, you know, when we had to have those peace conversations or to resolve conflict, we did it in Zoom rooms. So we worked from home for, I think, 90 days the most. And after those 90 days, we came back in the building and we began to create content, you know, so that we can continuously push the True Colors message out, because we realized so many people were going digital then, and we had already had some things in place set up. And so we started creating content for True TV, which tasked our employees not just with something to do, but a way to sharpen their skills, because we were building a team that we knew had to be effective and efficient when we finally got our brewery up and running. We also have a gymnasium, because in that 8-week onboarding, in the morning, we work your body. So we have a health and wellness class where you're learning about nutrition. You're learning how to take care of your body during certain seasons or just in general. We have a fitness class, which is hands-on, and we have yoga. I want you to close your eyes for a minute if you're listening and think about a tough gang member doing yoga, right? And so it's so powerful when you see it. And what's so remarkable about that, Michael, is that we have a video that we submitted to the United Nations that won a People's Choice Award. And in that video, there's a young man named Dacia Smith, who was an HR specialist at the time. And his goal was to become director of health and wellness. He came in the original 11. I'm proud to say today that Dacius is our director of health and wellness. So the student actually was prepared and equipped to today become the teacher. Human resource, HR, we're in this really sensitive place right now where, you know, we can't look for the things that we need. We have to re-engineer it. We have to create them on our own. There's some things that we know that need to change, and we're hoping that somebody creates a program or a tool. We have to take our pen, our paper, and sit in conference rooms with our teams and come up with a strategy or a new system that we can use to apply with the world of work that we're seeing right now in our individual companies. What works for True Colors may not necessarily work for another organization. There are pieces that they can use, and you may be able to translate it. But when you're working with the company, the company is based on industry, is based on vision, mission, and values. And so you have to design from that data point. And when you design from that data point, you'll find that HR not just medical professionals that we had to become last year with COVID-19, and not just pros on talent management or recruitment, but we're also entrepreneurs. You know, we have to create internally in the workspace for what we need to become and to stay effective. The world of work today is not going to be contingent on just the program. It's going to be contingent on the people that's running the departments called human resource. I call it re-engineering HR, Michael. And re-engineering, when you think about, you can redefine it and you can reevaluate it, and those are all great. But when you engineer something, that means that there's an internal fix that's happening, and it is technical, right? It's sometimes mechanical, it's data driven, but what you do internally affects externally. And so HR has to be re-engineered. And I'm hoping that I can help, you know, other HR folks see that in the coming year. It's a big goal of mine.
One of the big challenges around remote and hybrid work, you know, has been communication, connecting. It sounds like you've got some interesting lessons to share from your experiences with people who are working HR in organizations that are in hybrid work, dealing with how do they get people to talk to each other properly? How do they get people to relate?
Hybrid work is hard, especially when it comes to communication, because you can be so distracted, you know, when you're not inside the office, because you have other things happening in the environment around you. And so one of the things that I learned, and, you know, I can share some, you know, I'll share some of these tips, is that make sure that you shape your space. You shape your space for what you need in your now. And that means that, you know, you remove anything that would distract you if you can. If you can't, then you find a space that you can, that you'll be able to maximize. And that may be your bedroom for some people. So if you're looking for ways to communicate, I wouldn't just depend on Slack and email. We also added mobile text messaging through a simple text system, just because everybody's still looking at their phone when you have this hybrid experience. And so we added a simple text system to get information across, to post about events that we were doing that were virtual or classes that were happening at the specific time with ongoing alerts. We looked at what worked best for our team. Zoom is a great option, but there's so many other options that you can use to talk to people on video. And, you know, I think that, you know, right now, seeing people makes all the difference, but people want more than just seeing each other. They want an experience when you are working in the hybrid environment. And so I often suggest, we have this framework for Disrupt You, which is formal training, development activity, special project, beyond the block experience. And so if you take that framework and you talk about more hybrid environments, you're sitting people down inside the office, which is kind of that formal training, but you're giving them activities and special projects so they can present collectively as a team, so they can continuously build ongoing connections, which is important. That bag that I sent home with those cards, I gamified it. People look forward to, you know, pop up beer bingo, you know, how are we going to secure the bag, right? And so it was experiences. And so when you are creating hybrid environments, you still have to build company culture. You still want your environment, you know, to complete the tasks that are at hand, because the organization still has to function and flow. But you also want to make sure that you're keeping in mind some of the challenges that people may face. And you have to keep in mind some of the strategy that the company wants to achieve. Maybe you are hosting an inclusive ship that's virtual and people are having lunch together to build conversation and you're measuring afterwards. Maybe you are hosting a game night with your team, or even better, maybe you guys are all coming together and you're providing feedback on the last experience that you had. So when we think about hybrid working, we have to come up with hybrid strategy. So start backwards. What do you hope to achieve? You know, what do you have to achieve for the organizational strategy, for the company's bottom line, and for the people strategy? And once you define those things, you work your way back on how you can achieve those results.
What kind of lessons could you draw from the models that you're working with that corporate companies could use to improve the employee experience and engagement?
I would tell corporate companies that communication is important. I call it the language of the learned. You understand the people that you're serving and the language matches that in the workplace. And so lingo is important. And so how you communicate effectively is based on the people that you serve and the industry that you're in. Another lesson I learned on leadership: if serving is beneath you, then leadership is above you. There's been some sometimes that I've had to serve the team in order to lead the team. In the space that we're in right now, empathetic leadership is powerful. There is a such thing as being too empathetic. You have to draw the line. But when people know that you care, when you activate the KIND code, and KIND is an acronym for knowledge inspires new direction. If you define and design your systems and strategy based on the data that you collect and you begin to shape from there, people will know that you care, not just about the bottom line, but they'll know that you care about them in the workplace. And I think that that's important in the way of work that we're in today. And understand the people that you're talking to so that you understand the language that you need to speak to them to. Because sometimes what we don't realize is that influence can trump authority. People don't always listen or respond because of the role that you're in. They listen based on the influence that you have on their life or that you've had on their life. And so if you open up your ears and listen, that'll help gain influence. It's great to be a person of authority that also has influence. You can have both. And that is, I believe, the most powerful form of leadership, where your people trust you because they know who you are and what your intentions are, but you also are in a position where you can make decisions. When I came to True Colors, I didn't have any authority. But when I came in that first day, I kind of shared a story. I shared a story about this young girl that grew up in Brooklyn, New York, that went through these things and that was able to change her life. And the guys could relate to that story. And I listened to what they said. And that began to build a trust between us. I listened to them carefully. So even though I didn't have any authority, I began to shape the influence I had because they trusted me, because I was honest and authentic with who I am and what my intentions were for being there. So I'm sold on the mission. You know, I believe that better is possible and that it starts with you and that we all play a significant role in making an impact in the lives of others. But the world of work has changed. They call it the great resignation. I like to call it the great revelation, right? That people are having aha moments. They're looking at things that motivate them. Things that are mission focused and that are aligned to their vision and values for themselves. They're looking for to work in places that aren't going to affect their mental health. Right. And when you're looking at those things, you know, that means that you've made a decision to put yourself first. Yes, but it also means that your values are so important to you. And so I think that a lot of sustainable brands, B Corps and impact companies are going to do well in this next couple in this next season in the world of work, because all those companies have missions attached to them. And so people are looking for a place where they can align their values. Purpose is often predicated from your past, from passion, and sometimes from a pain. And so there's a place that you can relate and something that stirs in you that makes you want to do a thing. And so now in this world of work, we've had this revelation that it's finally time to do this thing that's been stirring on the inside of us. The biggest revelation, though, and this is, you know, I don't know if this is in line, is that with so many open jobs, companies still haven't removed the checkbox off their application. And so I just like, I mean, that's a whole conversation for me, is that we have millions of people at a second chance hires who can work these jobs, but they're not being offered these jobs, even though we have a lack in the workplace. And so what this is doing in this great revelation is that employees are having aha moments and employers are reshaping what they do. KO, Kalila Olokunola, has been talking about three the hard way for years, but companies are actually doing. And three the hard way is you can be people focused, purpose driven, and still profit aligned. You can make money, you can impact people, and you can make a change and a difference in your community or in communities across the country. And now is the time to do it, because if you want the best employees, if you want employees that want to come to work every day and that want to make a real significant difference and impact, right, that don't just care about what they make, but they care about the impact that they make also, because there's value there, there's a return on investment there, then you have to also change what you believe as an employer.
The stuff you just said, yeah, a lot of it gets limited by company culture, whatever that means. So how do you deal with overcoming an archaic or, you know, an old culture that doesn't want to change, even though maybe the people want to change and the employees want to change, but the company just doesn't want to change?
we can always fight on this line that we are on, but no matter what we fight on this line, it starts at the top and it trickles down from the head. And so if the CEO and senior leadership is not on board with a change of culture, it makes it extremely difficult for the people at any level underneath them to make significant change. And when they do try to do it, it has to be done on a daily basis. It's almost like a tug of war. You have to put something in place to address it because you know the effect that it's had. And so culture has become, I think, a stumbling block for a lot of organizations because a lot of organizations are still stuck in their ways, or they're stuck in this way where they believe that they know everything instead of having this each one teach one approach. When you're looking to change things or make impact with a culture that is outdated or out of style, you know, I think that you have to present from the organizational strategy level why the change of culture would be impactful in the most important place for the people you're speaking to, which is usually the bottom line. You have to show the return on investment, not just for the product or the services, but also for the people. Like if we change this culture, we may have less turnover. If we change this culture, we may have more people showing up on time, or we have less people taking extreme PTO. And so you have to present it in a way in the language that they understand and what they are looking at. And most archaic cultures or most outdated cultures are ran by individuals who are really focused on the bottom line. And so you have to show them how making that shift or that small change, even if it's in baby steps, can affect and address that bottom line and give them more of a return on investment than what they're seeing right now.
What would you say to an HR person who really wants to make a difference in their company, who really wants to have that shift happen, who really wants to have the employees engaged, excited, being part of something, but they're frustrated and they're finding it's hard to make that difference? What would you tell them to do?
I would tell them to create a purpose plan. What it does, it usually shows you how you can apply some of what you want for yourself individually in your company. You can't be functional for the company unless you're functional first for yourself. And so I would take time out to re-engineer your perspective. Find your why. Simon Sinek says that people don't buy products, they buy your why. And so when you know your why, you'll always figure out your how. And if your why is the same, you can begin to put some small task in place. You know, they have these things people do at the beginning of the year called vision boards, and I hate them by themselves, but combined with a bankable blueprint, a binder, and a plan, I think that they can be extremely effective. How do you connect yourself with people that are like you? It's like join a tribe or build one. Unbelieve that if you don't finish, you fail, because sometimes as HR, we are stuck in this position where if we don't get something across or if we don't get something that we present approved, that we fail. And so unbelieve the tradition that if you don't finish, you fail. You only fail when you start trying. Invest in yourself. And when you invest in yourself by taking time out to define what you want for you, you can see that on paper. And when you know what you want for you, you understand what you can present to the company and what you don't have to present to the company. I'm constantly giving myself motivation, and I said all that, you know, and I guess let me condense it so they have something tangible. Like, let's call it a formula for fortitude to help you get through. And so how did you find a formula for fortitude? Find a mantra. This is a quote or a statement that you can say to yourself that motivates you. It can be a song, you know, there's songs like "Don't Stop Believing," like all those songs, like come up with something, a mantra for yourself. Remember your morning headlines. You know, when you pick up the paper and you see headlines about what's happening in the news, remember the last thing that you did that you were proud of, that you were able to complete. And remember that feeling that you felt. Remember the success that you did then, because you can do it again if you understand your why. I take time every year to create my purpose plan. I always say things to myself like, be brave. I remember the program, the processes and systems I created that were successful. I also remember those things that I failed at and how I was able to get back up and forge forward, you know, with this plan that I had in place. But you have to know who you are. You have to understand your why and what you are called to do in order for you to move forward, especially if you're discouraged in HR. Our bounce back has to be strong because we deal with people every day. And in order for us to deal with people every day, we have to be able to deal with the first person, and that's us, ourselves.
Kalila, thank you so much for being here. This has definitely been a different kind of interview than we're used to.
Well, I hope different means good. And I hope that the listeners gathered something from it. I hope that CEOs and corporate companies and founders, venture capital firms, private equity organizations realize that, you know, in the world of work today that is hybrid, that you can create a framework that impacts your people, that they also understand that they can be people-focused, purpose-driven, and profit-aligned. And that if you're in HR and you're listening, you realize that we may not get everything that we need first, but if we take care of ourselves first and we create a plan for who we are and what we want, we'll be more effective in the workplace. HR sometimes needs HR.
Thank you, Khalila.
Thank you.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.